everybody, and it's good to see so many people here tonight. Lama Rixon is going to do a public talk on forgiveness. Lama Rixon has been teaching in Australia since 2000. He was a monk for over 20 years, and at the moment he's teaching and translating in Sydney, both for Buddhist teachers, Geshe Dawa is someone who translates for, and he's also translating for Tibetan refugees who come to Australia. So, sure, it'll be a fabulous talk.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me at the back? Can you hear me?
Just put this here. Some people are allergic.
Okay.
Is that alright?
Okay, yeah, you can just. So thank you all for coming here. It's nice to see you all. Some of you I have known for some time, and some of you I will know. It's nice to be in Armadale all the time. I get lots of love in Armadale. And that's true. I want to do some prayer. At the beginning, I'll do some prayer, and maybe as I do the prayer, you can do some meditation in whatever way you can do, or maybe you can do some reflection about your day and the wonderful life that you have. I just do a short prayer at the beginning. Sange chodan soge chonam na chanjo pando da ne kyab sanche Lage jen soge ben zonam ge ron na ben je sange ropa Sange chodan soge chonam na chanjo pando da ne kyab sanche Lage jen soge ben zonam Dola benja sangen ruba sho sange jodan soge jonam na janju bandu dan ne kyapsa Dage jen soge ben ton hamge dola benja sange ruba sho esim jen tam jen deva dan deve gyudan denba gyuche dunga dan dunga ge gyudan trawa Dunga me ben deva dan me trawa gyuche nere chadan dan trafe dan nyom na ne panjuru je Semja tamja deva dan deve gyutan dembra gyuche dunga dan dunga ge gyutan chava gyuche Dunga mebe deva dan me deva gyuche nere chadan dan chave Tanyam la ne banjuro je semja tamja deva dan deve gyutan dembra gyuche dunga dan dunga ge gyutan chava gyuche Dunga mebe deva dan me deva gyuche nere chadan dan chave Tanyam la ne banjuro je rangi ninga ne vesetra Lama java seta jeba om benza sama zaha Sange tamje driben guhan doje zimben uvanhe kunju sumge zawan Lama namna cha cha lo gombo doje che denba Tamje kembe dunba bho sunam yun den jasu shen Tishin shen la cha zan Ta ben du cha ta ben ju ge ven ye son le droba Chito tun dam cho juru ba shi ju cho la cha zan Tone trove lam yon dun, laba tala rabdu ne, shinge tamba yon den den, kendu na ya cha zan. Sange yon den samye jaba, chuge yon den samye jaba, kendu yon den samye. Samye jabla de jena, nambara mimba samye jaba, namda shindu ki vara. Shu mamre de humbe, umu sumba wa shudu sa wadama sumba wa shudu. Pombe gale omle jume, rimbo jene jube, nuya shin kya je wa nam kya nanda. Thank you. So, the topic tonight is, I think, the power of forgiveness. And the power of forgiveness is the power of forgiveness is, I guess, is something that enable us to change our mind. Now, to change our mind or change our thought, I should say, one thing is to have an intention, and then the other thing is to have a pure intention. So, in a situation of where the practice of forgiveness is done, and the objective of the practice of forgiveness is to cultivate an intention that is a pure intention, or a good intention, or a better intention. And the power of forgiveness comes with the practice of forgiving. Now, the power of forgiveness is basically when we are able to have that forgiveness. Then what it does is it sort of releases us, or it liberates us from a mental state that is not very nice to have, I guess. So, in the word in Tibetan, usually when we say sorry, we say gongthab. And then that gongtha basically is requesting, a form of requesting to someone whose mind probably has been hurt in some way. So you sort of requesting them to pardon you, or what it basically means that their intention, you know, be purified, or their thoughts be purified. So in that way, when we, for example, when we are able to forgive someone, then it makes our mind and our intention a bit purer than the state before. So therefore, the need for forgiveness is necessary for anyone, whether it is in some form of spiritual practices, or whether it is in the form of other area. Usually it is about not just saying sorry, but rather intending for a pure or purer mental state, a purer thought. So therefore, when we are able to have that intention that is purer. So in a situation where I am in conflict with someone, so I am in conflict with someone, and someone certainly has done something, and I'm upset. Okay? So I'm upset, I'm hurt. Okay? But if we are to remain in that state, then we will not be able to come out of it. And instead, we might increase the intensity of that state by repeatedly visiting that mental state. And therefore, it will bother us, it will start to bother us. And we are not happy. And just the thought of the event, or just the thought of the person, disturbs us. And also, not only the person, but even maybe the friends, the companions of the person we have conflict with, even they sort of make us a bit agitated. Yeah? We might maybe not like them, or we might even hate them. So therefore, the practice of forgiveness or the practice of forgiving is not only an act of altruistic kind, but also it help us liberate from a state that we, in a better mental state, would not want to be in. So therefore, the practice of forgiveness is a practice that is very desirable. That is very desirable because and that state actually is there more so because of our own contribution. So I might have a person in my mind, and that person would have done something to me, and I have not done the practice of forgiving or practice of forgiveness. So then what happens is that person, you know, from maybe whatever time, yesterday or a year before, you know, I'm holding on to that state of unhappiness, or I'm upset, or I feel, you know, all right to feel that kind of feeling. Now, it's okay if one wants to be like that, if one wants to, I guess, to be in that kind of state, but if one wants to really get something out of it, something bad has happened, but that very badness or unfortunate state can become a source of a wonderful thing, only when we are able to forgive. So, in a state of I am holding on to something, then I am the one who is actually maybe the cause of my own unhappiness because of myself holding on to it. Yeah? So certainly there would be a contribution by someone else, but that contribution probably is maybe 20%, but the 80% is totally from my own side because I am hanging on to it and I am clinging on to it. So, for example, someone said something to me. Yeah? If someone said something to me and they have said, yeah? That's just an example. We have many situations. We have many situations where we get hurt, and where we get hurt, and our inability to let go of it keeps us in there, and it makes us stiff, maybe. It makes us not be able to enjoy a nice day, for example. So just thinking about them or seeing them totally sort of affects us. And that state is something that is undoable only if one voluntarily, you know, contribute in it by maybe either understanding or knowing the fact that it is a sort of a state that is not really helping or contributing, but it's really affecting myself. So in a different situation where one is able to exercise the practice of forgiving, then oneself as well as the other person, is in a better situation. In a better situation, oneself also is not suffering. Oneself is not causing, I guess, the whatever percent of the experience that one is going through, as well as other person also might feel a bit better noticing that you or I am not that severely sort of affected. Because if other person also feel in that way, then other person also is not able to be happy. You know, other person also would have maybe a form of regret or feel a sad in a state of sadness. And especially if the other person has been someone, you know, who really cared for you and looked after you or something like that, then it might even hurt them, you know, for whatever thing that they have done. And they could also let go of it, but still the nature of human being is such that we care for each other and we love each other, we care for each other. Therefore, sometimes we are unable to forgive ourselves. So therefore, the power of the forgiveness is here enabling a thought or a mental state to become a bit purer. So when the mental state becomes a bit purer, then there is room for anything. Just as in the practice of spirituality, where one wants to progress, I guess, to the next stage, and so on, one needs to have a mental state that is not confused, a mental state that has no conflict, but a mental state that is clear and purer. Then the attainments or the progressing in spirituality happen. So therefore, I myself have had many times where I hold on to something that happened to me, and then it really made me feel unhappy, and also it really made me think of other person in a very very different way, maybe in a very negative way, and that did not really help very much. But I found sort of refuge or help when I was able to reflect at how good the other person is, irrespective of whatever has happened between me and the person. When I could not do it, I was really, really sort of struck, and I was really very unhappy and upset, and I was very unstable mentally, because things happen in our life, and it's just we are maybe not ready for things, and we have a sense of, I guess, permanency. And then things don't happen, and it happens in a very different way, and all of a sudden we find it very hard to forgive or to be able to see the things a bit better. So therefore, the power of forgiveness, I guess, the other way of forgiveness at a deeper level is one does all the work that needs to be done necessarily, mentally, and at the same time not even holding a thought of I have forgiven you or I have forgiven, because if the forgiving nature is a natural thing, you know? Now, natural forgiveness nature is require maybe a bit of insight. And the insight is, if one is to put oneself there as someone who has done something, I have forgiven or something like that, then one will still have that self as having contributed again. Yeah? But rather, if one is to look at it, maybe in this way, whatever I say, it does not have to be the exact thing for you know, anyone or everyone. But it's just a perspective. So if it helps, it's good. Otherwise, You know, it is just a talk. So what happens is when we are able to look at hold the situation, and if I just not contribute, if I myself I have a certain degree of control, and if I do not have control over myself, but I am the one who can control myself in any given situation, then if I am to minimize whatever the contribution I am putting into it, then the problem that is there or conflict there is a very minimal. It is a very small one, because oneself has contributed as much as one can. So therefore, just as if we hold on to something, say a handful of sand from the beach, and we take it up. And we hold on to it, then the sand will never go. The sand will never go, and we hold on to it because we are holding the sand. And the sand will never go, it just maybe some of them might come out, but it's in our fist. And I am the one who is holding it, so therefore the sand is going to be there. So I have to do the work, first of all. So then if I let go of maybe a little bit, just lift my one finger up, and then the second, and so on, then I am letting go of it, so then the sand, I guess it all goes down. And it's like that, where we ourselves contribute to the experience of unhappiness that we go through. So therefore, the teaching of letting go. Teaching of letting go does have a very important role when we are in a situation where we are hurt. So the other person also probably might not have an intention to hurt or harm us or to cause us, but we somehow are affected in that way, and so other person or whoever, you know, might not have that intention to harm us or upset us, but they have probably their own way of maybe doing things. Maybe things are not going well. They would have maybe 100 things going on in them. So therefore, the other way to maybe understand maybe a situation like that is maybe they themselves have many things going on in their head or whatever. So therefore, okay, a situation has happened. So this is basically looking at what one can do when one is in a situation. Now this thing is not just talking about an individual, but it has a collective. It has a collective practice of forgiveness. Yeah? Just as we, as a one person, might have something in a similar way, two person as a friend could have something like that to maybe other person. Maybe three person as a friend, or four or five, or as a group, might have maybe some experience. You know? So therefore, as a group, and if we hold on to it, especially in a group situation, if maybe one person is trying to deal with something, then if the group of the people is not able to do it, then that also person who probably is practicing a bit of forgiveness is again sort of influenced to hold on to those kind of emotion, maybe a negative emotion. And the other thing that one can do is together with this thing, one can do purification practices. Helps in purifying one's own mental state. Yeah? Now, purification practice can be a sitting meditation. just a sitting meditation and trying to maybe keep one's attention on the round of breath that one has. Yeah? It sort of make our mind to come to maybe an object of meditation. And in that way, it gives some room and some space. And sometimes when one is doing like that, all of a sudden in our mind, there are this wonderful thought sometimes come out. Also, the other form of purification practice is one can recite certain mantras of purification. Maybe Vajrasattva mantra one can recite and do purification practices. Or one can recite some of the sutras of purification kind. Yeah. And if one does not know this, one can just maybe relax and maybe lie down and have a good maybe visualization of maybe a place, something like that, just resting. But no one is in a serious mental state, an intense mental state of unforgiving, because human beings by nature are very kind. No? It's only sometimes when something major happens, then we find it a bit of a challenge. We find it a bit of a challenge. An ordinary person who have not much of, you know, spiritual practices done and so on, they might have, you know. Even the beings who have been doing spiritual practices, and so on have found it hard to forgive others, because even though beings are kind and so on, but even a very spiritual person can have a strong attachment, you know, a sense of permanency. A spiritual person who will recite maybe lots of mantra of compassion and who try to meditate on compassion and again, but who might not have meditated on the impermanent nature of things. No? So then all of a sudden when they are faced with a situation where they did not expect, and all of a sudden something happened which they thought and took for granted, and all of a sudden something happened and they act like worse than an ordinary person, because of not having maybe meditated on the impermanent nature of things. People could maybe receive some mantra of compassion, and they can recite the mantra of compassion and trying to invoke compassion in their heart. No? But maybe not having a good understanding of the impermanent nature, not having reflected or not having received. In these days, we receive initiations, and sometimes we hear some teachings on impermanence or the common foundations and so on. Sometimes we don't even hear and get a detailed explanation on the common foundations, and all of a sudden we are into doing some very profound practices. No? In those situations, so if one is doing lots of spiritual practices, maybe even doing retreat or meditation and so on, but if one is not very familiar with the reality of impermanence, then all of a sudden one faces a situation where one can't accept, and even a very spiritual person, you know, have a bout of anger, you know, of anger. This happens. And therefore, the reflection on impermanence is very, very important. Not only is impermanent promoted as like an important thing, but impermanent, the teaching on impermanence is given very highly recommendation by Buddhas. And now impermanent, we can understand impermanent at a gross level, where, okay, I will die, no? I will die one day. Yeah? But then, that is one thing, you know, okay, I will die one day and I'll see. Yeah? But the other thing is actually seeing how, you know, every time passing by, sort of death, one is nearing and nearing to the death, and thinking about it, it gets a bit deeper than just, yes, I will die one day. But when we actually look at it and what it means, what is impermanent, then it gets a bit deeper. So therefore, thinking on impermanence is, I think, the best tool in a situation of a practice of forgiveness. Because first of all, the impermanent is the nature, is nature, whether it is a solid rock or a fragile glass or maybe a candle, you know, whatever it is, a candle in a place where there is no distraction, where there is no air, and the candle will light and it continue, and the wick is there, and it might have a good amount of flame, but how long, you know? The candle is there until the wax run out or the wick comes off, you know? And not to mention about the candle that is right there in the middle of a stone. So impermanent has a different level, a subtle level of impermanence and a grosser level of impermanence. Yeah? And whether we like it or not, impermanence is the nature of each and every one of us. Because we are created with causes and conditions, because we are conditioned, therefore we suffer or we have experiences of suffering such as birth, old age, sickness and dying. Yeah? But so impermanent, Buddha says, now just because Buddha says, we don't have to accept it and take it as, okay, Buddha said it, you know, out of respect, but it's just something for us to really look at it and whether it is or not. So what Buddha advises to the bhikshus or the disciples is saying that impermanent, thinking about impermanent is very wonderful. Thinking about impermanence is similar to making offerings to the Buddha. So if we make set up an offerings, lots of offerings to the Buddha, yeah? And if we have a reflection on impermanence, yeah? It's similar to making offerings to the Buddha. Because when one meditate or reflect on impermanence, you know, it induces a sense of sadness, you know, of the situation of the whole world existence. Yeah? And that sadness leads to developing compassion, or that sadness leads to the decreasing of arrogance. Yeah? When we do not have an understanding of impermanence, then we feel a sense of permanency and we develop maybe some sense of arrogance. Yeah? We are maybe easier to get angry or upset, easily maybe discouraged. Yeah? But when one understands the impermanent nature, when one contemplate on it, then it helps induce a sense of sadness. It reduces the sense of arrogance. And it help eliminate a sense of jealousy, impermanence. Also, when it is properly reflected, it just gets rid of anger. It just gets rid of anger. And also impermanence leads to realizing the truth, maybe true nature of things. Because it is impermanent, therefore it sort of leads that things are not permanent or things do not exist inherently and so on. So, and then the Buddha goes further saying that those who reflect on impermanence, mitava sampanni sangi gi chingi lava, you know, one who reflect on impermanence is blessed by the Buddhas. So the blessing, basically, the blessing is a transformation, a positive transformation. When one is able to reflect on impermanence, you know, it brings about a positive transformation. So that is equal to being, you know, blessed by Buddha. Even if one is directly blessed by Buddha in the presence of Buddha, if one does not have a transformation in oneself, then there is not much of a blessing happening. When one reflects on impermanence, it is similar to receiving blessings from the Buddha, because the impermanent explanation helps oneself think in a different way, gain a perspective. And also, those who reflect on impermanence, Medava Sambhani, Sangye Ki Lung Tembayinam, those who reflect on impermanence are predicted by Buddha that they will be able to attain enlightenment, that they will be able to progress in their spiritual practices. So therefore, impermanent practicing also help in maybe help in understanding a situation. I myself have been through experiences that are very... I wouldn't have known these things, but I had to go through things and I was very upset and unhappy and so on. But when I think about, when I thought about the impermanent nature of things and so on, it sort of gave me a room to reflect on and not be really, you know, upset. But and also it generated my faith or made it stronger in the teachings of the Buddha, and especially in the teachings of impermanence. Because when we do not have this perspective, then we are like someone who is very upset, but do not have maybe a better tools to deal with it. And then we sort of become unstable. No, not stable, but one becomes sort of unstable. So therefore, the reflection on impermanence. Yeah? Also knowing that this very experiences that one is going through, no, is also a nature of impermanence. If it is a feeling, no, then it is a feeling that has to go away. No, there is not a feeling that is permanent, and there is not a feeling that is everlasting. Yeah? Feelings are like water bubbles, so it is said. If a water bubble, it does not last very long, water bubbles just go away. In a similar way, our feelings, if we allow it to dissolve by itself without making it solid, without giving it life, then our feeling of unhappiness also do not have like a everlasting life. It's only when we hold on to it, when we hold on to it strongly, then we give it a life, lifespan. No? And that lifespan can be 10 years. We hold on to it and then we hold on to it. And we never sort of let go of it. You know? And something that has happened maybe 10 years ago, no? We are still, because of our own holding on to it, no? We are holding on to it, so therefore still we continue to be suffer. And then that kind of thing also lead to anger, that holding on to something, you know, leads on to developing anger, and then the anger develops, you know, further physical, maybe verbal and mental. And then if we are not able to let go of that feeling that is like water bubble and we give it a life, then we suffer and we get angry and we feel also maybe justified to be angry. And when we are angry, really, when we are angry, then we are not able to enjoy. Yeah? We are not able to enjoy maybe the food, maybe the weather. We might not be able to, you know, sleep very well. We become very unstable. We become very unpopular. We lose our friends. Our parents are scared of us, and so on. And the list is just, this can just go on and on. So therefore, one thing is knowing that whatever feeling it is, you know, if we let it, you know, to be in its own way, it sort of just goes away. It sort of just goes away. And it might come back. It might come back, but still, if we are to let go of it, it will just go away. Yeah? But then the other thing what we can do is when we have such feeling, you know, and those very feeling of anger or unhappiness. Sometimes something very, very positive come out of something that we go through that is very hard. Yeah? Very, very positive come out of something that we, you know, we go through a very difficult situation and so on. You know? And those kind of situations sometimes, if we have, say, a faith in something, and those kind of situations sometimes help make firmer our faith in maybe our belief, our trust in teachings. You know? Because if we are to go for refuge at such time in Dharma, then we know we are protected because we go for refuge in something that is pure. So therefore, we experience the effect of going for refuge in Dharma instead of going for refuge in, say, delusion. No? So when we go for refuge in that, then we experience, and immediately we experience the benefit of the Dharma. And when we have that, then our trust and our confidence in Dharma grow and it becomes stronger. And that gives us a platform, you know, for further strengthening our maybe spiritual journey. So therefore, other form of, practice of forgiveness is also in a spiritual sort of development scenario. When we say, when we have vowed, when we make some commitment, and then if we were not able to fulfill the commitment, yeah. Such as respecting our, say, root guru. Yeah? So the root guru, respecting root guru is like basically someone who is the one who guides you on the path to enlightenment, who give you initiation, who explain what bodhicitta means, who sort of holds your hand and maybe guide you to a state of enlightenment, but you yourself have to do the journey. So the first thing, say, in the root downfalls is upsetting, maybe belittling our guru, yeah? In a very Vajrayana context. Yeah? That's like the first downfall. But even if one has done such an act of root downfall, but that very root downfall still is purifiable, it's still transformable. So therefore, even such a downfall that should not have happened, but through purification practices, something even better come out of this. So then the second maybe root downfall whatever the Buddha, for example, have taught, and you have maybe taken some form of commitment, and then if you go against it, that's like the second downfall, and that also is purifiable and transformable. Yeah? And then the third one is to get angry to your Vajra brothers and sisters. Yeah? That basically means basically, in a very different way, it is like your own spiritual brothers and sisters. Yeah? So, for whatever reason, and spiritual brothers and sisters are usually someone, you know, you receive teachings together and you have a bonding. Sometimes when you, because of some small reason or another, when you have an anger or resentment feeling to your spiritual brothers and sisters, it is not very desirable, but still that kind of mental state is purifiable and transformable. And in brief, there is not any negativity that is not transformable or not purifiable. Any kind of negativities are purifiable, and that's the good thing about negativities, that they are purifiable and transformable. So then, if I have maybe upset my teacher, then I go to my teacher and I ask for pardon. You know? And in that way, I would ask for sort of forgiveness. But basically what I am requesting is the teacher to be kind to me, and I would be requesting teacher to whatever thought, you know, he or she has, you know, may it be purified, because I sort of say, look, you know, I have made a mistake, and therefore, you know, please, I have made a mistake and this has happened, but I'm not going to, you know, repeat such a mistake. So then we say gonda. Gontava is the basically purification of the intention. So the teacher might not necessarily have, you know, a bad intention for you, but I would just go, you know, and from my side I would request for forgiveness if I have maybe done something. So in a similar way, this practice is very beautiful, and it is still sort of something that, you know, within, not necessarily with teachers, but with one's Dharma brothers and sisters, you know, okay, and this has happened, you know, I'm sorry, or whatever, you know. And these kind of little practices of asking for forgiveness and forgiving actually leads to a bonding, a very strong bond, and that strong bond help each other, especially with maybe receiving teachings or practicing and so on. So therefore, the power of forgiveness is immeasurable, and it really depends on the way, you know, one does this practice of forgiving. Now, if one is to do the forgiveness, okay, I forgive you, but if one has still a big ego in it, you know, I am the one who have forgiven you again, you know, then that kind of forgiveness, really, that kind of forgiveness is that kind of forgiveness probably lead to further unhappiness, maybe stronger unhappiness, when one repeats the mistake that they have done. Whereas if one has, even if someone did not have said sorry, but if one is hurt, and if one voluntarily have forgiven oneself as well as the other person, you know, then it builds up a habit, it builds up a good habit of forgiving. You know. So even if someone is to do even worse than that, you know, one is already have accumulated a habit of forgiving someone. Even before they ask for forgiveness, you already have forgiven. So the next time if something happens, one is already used to forgiving. In that way, one becomes much better in forgiveness. And in that way, then one does not develop a negative emotion in one's mind. So therefore, the power of forgiveness is a very powerful practice. So, at a time of degeneration, where everything is sort of degenerating, you know, so then we would have, you know, things. And if we have things, if we are to practice the practice of forgiveness, you know, then it really helps in contributing in a community of nice friends. It really helps in maintaining one's whatever spiritual practices it is. It really helps in maintaining good friendship with others. It really helps even building the platform of friendship even stronger. So in that way, the power of forgiveness is a very powerful thing to have. So the forgiveness is good. And when one does one good thing about, when one actually is, say, in a meditation of forgiving, okay? So if one is to, say, one has had a particular experience, and one wants to solve this by maybe not holding on to it. So then if one does maybe some form of practices, at that time one can think of all the moment that one has not forgiven in the past. So, okay, this time not like I'm just, you know, doing forgiving only this, but all form of maybe all form of forgiveness that one have not done from beginningless time or from whatever time, you know, with the genuine sense, with the really genuine sense, with the genuine heart, you know, for all the experiences of not forgiving and holding resentment, you know, all of them, you know, today at this time when I am doing this genuine practice of forgiveness, I bring all of those negativity here, and I forgive all of them. You know? And if one is to do that, then it help oneself register, maybe clearer, you know, that those things are also, you know, something that has happened. So just as we dedicate a merit, for example, at the time of dedication, we try to include all the positive things that we have done in the past. Yeah? And including all of them, things that we have forgot to dedicate, including all of them, all the merit thing from beginning last time, we bring all together. And then we dedicate, you know, and that kind of dedication is very powerful. So basically it comes down to oneself, you know, and oneself thinking through it, whatever is. Forgiveness is certainly a must quality to learn, and especially if one is to, say, you know, following the path, following the teachings and so on, it is a wonderful quality to become used to, wonderful practice to become habitual. Otherwise one could have been in a spiritual world of spiritual practices for a long time, but then still, you know, not being able to really let go or forgive. So therefore, you know, cultivating a really genuine sense of care for oneself and others, and one can reflect, maybe one can recollect inspirational beings, maybe Buddhas or your teacher, or maybe Bodhisattva of compassion or loving kindness, bringing all those positive qualities in one's mind. And, you know, and then being very clear in one's mind, one is going to do this thing of forgiveness, you know. And a person, you know, temporarily, whoever have upset us, you know, for the temporary, for whatever karma it has happened, you know, that person is also someone, you know, very good person, you know, a good friend maybe. They are a bit distracted or they are a bit upset, whatever it is. It's certainly someone, you know, who, you know, is maybe an object of compassion, or who is someone who has done lots of wonderful things, you know. So certainly, you know, I must do something about it. I must reduce maybe the thing that I have. And with this kind of concern, you know, and one do let go, and one try to whatever form of practices. One can even say prayers, you know, on their behalf, and so on. It really comes down to whatever kind of spiritual qualities that one can invoke in one's mind, and then, you know, and then forgive. And once you have forgive something, then you feel a different freedom. You know? Once you do that kind of thing, immediately one feel the power of practice is such that one feel immediately, even at the very point when one is doing, you know, one feel a very different in oneself. There is a beautiful being in all of us. There's a wonderful kindness in all of us. It's just a matter of invoking it, you know, with a sense of good reflection and with a sense of warmth in one's heart. Then one realizes how, you know, anything, maybe anything, is forgivable or pardonable. And then doing it not to really encourage our ego, saying, oh, I've done it again, you know, I'm a good sort of person, but rather, you know, I look forward, you know, even if this thing happened, I look forward to do these things. But these are all sort of positive reflection that one could think about, but there are even more positive reflections that one can think about. Yeah, there are so many. And maybe many of us probably don't need too much deep, maybe, reflection. We already are very good. We already are very good, then, you know, we just need a little bit of flipping of our thoughts, you know? And then, you know, everything, you know, just fall onto whatever the pieces that they should be. So maybe we can do a short meditation here of forgiveness. Maybe you already have, already have wonderful qualities of forgiveness, but just for the sake of maybe reflecting on the positive qualities. So the meditation is self-guided meditation here. One could maybe invoke a situation, maybe a recent situation or beings who have abused us or who have done terrible things to us, any whoever, and maybe developing a great sense of friendship with them, thinking of them as friends, maybe one's spiritual friend, one's good friend. If not, if someone is very difficult, at least thinking of them as forgivable, pardonable. If someone who themselves are going through confusion and so on, then cultivating lots of compassion. And then allowing our heart maybe to become warm for them. And one can even think of some prayers, good wishes for them. Okay? Now one can visualize at one's heart level, maybe a lotus flower, if one can visualize, or maybe a candle, or maybe a moon disk. Yeah? And then from there, one visualize, maybe one could even try to feel maybe some form of warmth at one's heart. If needed, one can even try to touch one's heart to bring about some form of warmth and friendship. Then one can send rays of light in any color that one can visualize. And to one's whoever, one's friends, beings one have difficulty trying to cope with, or to anybody, any sentient beings, send rays of light and send lots of love for them and prayers also to them and wish them good, wish them happiness. Now send rays of light to me and forgive me for talking so long. I have developed a habit of talking too much these days. It's okay. If you have any questions, please, it does not have to be related to the topic this evening. If you have any questions, I would be very happy to hear and see. Yes.
What do you think? In order for people to forgive, sometimes they actually need to have therapy to give sometimes they have too much hurt to be able to actually forgive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Certainly. I think probably, in many situations, people need therapy to rely on. Maybe practices of meditation on forgiving probably supplement the therapy that one is taking on. Probably at every different places would have maybe different ways of dealing with hurt. Yes.
What about the question of forgiving oneself?
Forgiving oneself?
Yeah.
Yes. I think forgiving oneself. Probably. I guess happens as one does forgiving of others, but forgiving of oneself probably is again purifying one's thought or one's intention. No, when one is able to maybe purify one's thought about or one's intention to others, then it sort of help. To make one's mind a bit clearer. But yes, forgiving oneself is important. It's very important, and particularly thinking if one has, one feels like maybe one have, suffered too much and so on. One can certainly do practices of forgiving oneself by reflecting on maybe, this has happened and this has happened. And maybe that is also done, and I am very bad, and so on. One could think, and one might, always hold on to oneself as being someone who is, who is not good or who has done this and that. But forgiving oneself really comes down to understanding that whatever one has done. And one has done maybe under the influence of, under the circumstances of this and that. So therefore, knowing that one should not be too harsh on oneself for what one has done. It's not just oneself. There are other factors that have contributed too. Even in a situation where one has a feeling, for example, a feeling of unhappiness, one thing is there is the feeler, which is oneself. And then there is a conditioner such as whatever happens at that time. Say maybe seeing something. Yeah? So one is observing something. So one is unhappy, but one is observing, seeing something. No? So that seeing something, whatever unhappy scene, a scene that leads to the unhappiness, has a different, certain degree of contribution in that feeling. And then also there is condition like just before the unhappiness mental state, whatever the pre-mental state it is also there as a conditioner. Yeah? So therefore there are four maybe different ways of looking at it. In that way one is able to minimize the abusing oneself or feeling bad, because there is only this amount of thing that has happened from my side, but there are other factors also have contributed in it. So therefore one is able to see that one is not to be blamed, totally to be blamed. One has contributed, but you know, one has contributed not just, and one is not the only person solely responsible for it, for other person have provoked something, or they have done something. When one is able to look at it in that way, Everything, anything has, I think, at least three or four conditioners. Three conditioners, maybe three things contribute to it, or four. No? One could be, maybe, as I mentioned, if I feel happy right now seeing many happy faces. No? So there is an observatory sort of conditioner. This is also conditioning my happiness. And then the second thing is I myself is feeling happy, I have contributed in it. And then maybe the pre-cause of it is just before that, you know, I would have had, you know, a similar sort of happy or at least conducive to happy situation, you know? And then maybe coming together of all of it, then there is a happiness happening. So in a similar way, one can see that If one feels that one has done totally wrong and one is to be blamed, then when one looks at it in that way, then one has contributed but only, you know, maybe 25% of it. So then one can be less harsh on it. And one need to forgive oneself. One need to forgive oneself, and there's nothing wrong with forgiving oneself. It's a very important thing to do. But at the same time, one need to remember that one has to also forgive other people. Yeah? So it is not just like purely forgiving oneself and not forgiving others.
About people forgiving you, because I went through my life and I could find an awful lot of people that I that needed to forgive me for my actions.
Yes, it's true.
Can I speak for the need for others? Need forgiveness? For themselves?
Yeah. I think it really depends on what your relationship with the other person and where you are, you know. Sometimes it probably is a good idea if someone is holding something to you and some form of resentment to you, and if they are open to any sort of a reasonable instruction, you know, then it is worth doing it, because it will help other person, you know. Because they might not be able to see, you know, they might not have a nice perspective as you have, you know. And if they are conducive to it, and if they are open to it, and especially if it is the right time, you know, and if you are skillful, you can really say, look, you know, I don't really mind, you know, it would be nice if you forgive me, but I don't really mind very much, you know. I really think it would be helpful to you, you know. I have certainly contributed, you know, you can blame me totally for it, you know. But if you live in that way, then, you know, you also think like this, that I am the one to be blamed and totally to be blamed. But you have to live with that, you know. And if you live with that, then you will have that kind of habit with others also, no? So if they are really, really open to it, and if they are ready to such maybe profound explanation, you know, it is certainly worth doing. But then it really depends on where they are, you know, where they are. Yes. Sometimes people, other people are really, you know, really ready. So sometimes you don't even have to say something, they just do it, no? No.
If somebody, for example, is treating somebody in a really bad way, like continually treating them in a bad way, like repeatedly, and they just keep forgiving them, then that person may continue treating this person in a bad way unless this person is very strong, you know. Mm. And so it's like there's that side that, yeah, you can keep forgiving, but it has to go hand in hand with
certainly
something else.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But with regard to forgiving, one can do it. You know, one can do it all the time, you know. But one might not necessarily have to appear, you know, that you are so forgiving, you know, so they can keep continuing, you know. You can continue to forgive, you know, people, you know, maybe many mistakes they made, you can continue to keep forgiving them, you know, mentally. It's a good practice to do. But you don't have to appear like, you know, you are someone that they can just get away with, you know. So sometimes you even might have to, you know, be stern and strong, you know. But you can be, you know, you would have a skill or where you are and how to do it. But with regard to forgiving, I think, people make mistake. And, you know, there is in Australia, for example, you know, there is maybe, you know, people saying, you know, we have to say sorry and so on, you know. So, you know, it's a nice thing, because when you forgive someone, they really feel, you know. But one can forgive, but as I say, one does not have to be like, have to appear in that way, you know. So then, you know, if it helps for them to reduce, you know, whatever they are doing, whatever suitable, you know, approach, we think would be good for them. No? One could do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Marissa, and I wonder about the issue of trust in another person. When one feels that one has been hurt by another person, even though one might find forgiveness in oneself, that person, is that loss of trust towards that person as to whether they might, you know, harking back to what the other woman said, that other person might continue to act in a way that's hurtful towards you, and so it causes that loss of trust.
Yes, trust is a
rebuild that, or is that something that's
trust is very tricky. No? trust seems to be, I think, something that is often, you know, often, maybe often, maybe not very strong. No? Trust is hard to have. Trust is hard to have, and I don't know, maybe, you know, sometimes maybe trusting is not necessarily a good thing, no? Like, maybe, you know, you could have a strong trust, as an example, but what you are trusting might not be the thing, you know? So therefore, if you have trusted someone to be in some ways, then if they have, you know, sort of shaken your trust, or your trust has now, you know, then probably it is hard to come back again, no? And I really think it's up to the individual whether they want to build up a trust, you know, because sometimes we could be trusting, we could be trusting something, and it does not happen, no. And then the question is whether, you know, trust is really valid or not, no. Because one could have trust, one could think maybe blind trust or blind faith, you know, and one try to squeeze some form of oil out of sand, no. But it's not going to produce, no. Like, so I can't say, you know, whether one should build up trust in that way, but one can always sort of forgive, you know, and then one can probably make, you know, a good decision.
But when we discuss being hurt or a broken trust, have we not put an expectation, a standard onto someone else's behaviour?
we put expectation, and therefore we get upset, no? And we expectation, I am one of them. So, you know, I lost trust, no? And I felt like that, and you know, I felt like that, and you know, and I was just like, so our expectation certainly is there. We expect maybe things to be in some ways, you know, and often maybe it works in that way, you know. But sometimes it does not work, you know, and that's life, you know. But if all the time it is not working, then maybe there is a better way of not having, you know, any expectations. This, you know, we know by experience. Trust means confidence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Little bit.
Little bit?
I think so. Because trust does probably mean blind.
Blind.
Not blind in the other, and trust means
confidence.
Wait on. No, I'm not clear after all, actually. It's more trusting out myself, I thought, but it could be trusting.
Reliance.
Like reliance, that you can rely that something will go a particular way.
But that's assuming that everything stays static.
Yeah.
There is no change.
It's
about change from day to day.
But it could also be based in morality. So, for example, we might have an expectation that a person will behave in a particular moral way in relation to us or in a particular relationship, and that's often underpinning trust as well. So, you know, within morality we have a sense maybe of permanence within that morality.
We are so conditioned, you know. We are so conditioned that, you know, we can't even trust ourselves, you know.
I think when you do trust yourself, then you, that's real trust.
Yes.
It's the trust that you can rely on, that, like you said, make a good decision.
We can have a degree of trust, yeah? Maybe we can have a degree of trust about maybe tomorrow, you know, I would be alive, for example. No?
No?
We can sort of, you know, just judging by, maybe just judging by my health and, you know, and so on. Maybe we can have a, you know, I mean, it's nice to have a degree of sort of trust I would be, you know, but it does not necessarily mean that, you know, I will be there, so there is not like 100% in it. But one don't want to live with also distrust. Yeah? It would be very hard to live with, you know, distrust. Just an idea, maybe, you know, I trust, but things are impermanent, you know. Things can maybe change. Then it sort of prepares oneself, you know.
Right, one's own behavior as well.
Yes.
Yes. So it's like you have to pretend the illusion is real to some extent, so you can have some trust in what's going to happen.
That's very profound. when there is the mention of illusion and real, I get confused. I'm getting old now. What is the word for when your mind has become very big, yeah, about something, yeah? Is it maybe confidence, like
certainty,
hubris? When it is related to certainty, probably that's the right word, but. When we talk about faith, for example, we say, like in Buddhism, you know, there are maybe three different, maybe there are more, but usually they say there are three types of faith. One is sort of a voluntary faith, or one is like a faith of admiration, when one feels, you know, when one feels like a sense of admiration, you know. But that does not necessarily is unchanging, because it's just how you felt, and how you, it's very admirable, some kind of quality, but that can change, because it's very conditional in a way. I mean, anything is conditional, but then that faith is slightly different to a faith which is where one sort of wishes to have, one sees something very inspiring and one wishes to have those qualities, one wishes to have those qualities on oneself. And there is a faith, but this is described as a faith, and this faith of wanting to have those positive qualities. And then maybe trying a little bit, one actually experiences something about it, some real about it, and one develops a confident, you know, a faith of confidence, which is now very strong, that it cannot be changed. Even if one other person is to say, but it does not sort of change, you know? So, is that faith of trust, or faith of confidence, faith of certainty?
Conviction.
It's a knowing.
Unwavering.
Unwavering.
It's your truth. Your truth.
Mm. So, in Tibetan it's called yi che. Basically, yi is like mind, and the mind is not small, it's like big. In this case, where, you know, now the mind is not going to be defeated, no? It's so big about it. So it's sort of unwavered, it's like a solid mountain, no? But it's usually, it's like a descriptive, it's yi che. He is like mind, and che basically means something that is large, something that is big.
Mm-hmm. Maybe when faith becomes so strong that it is as good as strong as knowledge, there is no doubt.
There is no doubt.
Certainty.
Yeah. Certainty, no, yeah. Yes. That's good. To add these words makes it stronger, you know, no doubt.
Solid.
Solid certainty.
That's trust in a way,
isn't
it? In English, there's in philosophy, there's a distinction between faith and truth and belief, and they all have different shades of meaning. So faith does not have to be based on any proof or any fact. It's something that you have which does not have to be based, it does not have to be provable.
Okay.
So
and
that's
then?
One of the differences between faith and truth and belief. Faith doesn't have to be proved.
And what is belief then?
Well, belief, you can believe something. You can believe that 2 and 2 make 5.
Mm-hmm.
Your belief does not have any relationship with
what
the truth
is.
What is true.
Okay.
It's what I can believe whatever I like.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to believe the earth was flat
mm-hmm.
with great conviction.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't right. So
uh-huh.
that's belief.
Okay. And the truth is, yes.
Well, we don't know that 2 and 2 equals 4 in everywhere in the universe, are
there? You might. I was.
You must be a scientist.
there are three distinctions there in English.
Is there in maybe in I'm very sorry, I don't know very much about Christianity. Some of you probably know very well, teachings, just like maybe a chapter on forgiveness. They would have, yeah? Do you know any story or something?
to forgive is divine.
Okay.
Biblical.
The parable of the prodigal son.
To err is human, to forgive divine.
Yeah.
Just the whole concept of Christ or the cross saying, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do.
That's
you
better err.
They don't know.
there's Jesus said that you should, when someone hits you on one cheek, you should turn the other.
Mm.
So that's a sense of forgiveness, a sense of giving the other cheek for them to hit as well.
Yes.
To let go, you know, of the resentment.
Uh-huh.
That could be interpreted as that.
Mm.
Yes.
But not necessarily.
Jesus was asked by one of his followers, how many times shall I forgive somebody who does me wrong? Shall I forgive him 7 times? And Jesus said to him, you shall forgive him 7 times 7.
Okay.
And the number 7 indicates continuous,
never
ending.
That's a good one.
You like that one?
Good one. I think there must be many words like that, really, in Buddhism. But I think. The word forgiveness, as far as I sort of, my English is, you know, maybe it's okay, but it's not like my inner language. You know what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, forgiveness is often, to me, it appears like someone asking you, you know, for pardon, you know, or someone saying you're sorry. And then you're saying, okay, it's fine, you know, I've forgiven you. No, it sort of comes to me, it sort of comes like that, because the word, English word, but I guess word is just a word, really, no? And what we make, you know, how deep meaning we make out of it, really, it sort of becomes kind of a reality. In Tibetan, if I make a mistake, I would say gonda. No, I would say gonda. 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 Basically, gongpa is like a thought, or you know, gongpa can be interpreted as an intention, and thakpa is to purify. No, so this sense of, I guess, purify the intention or purify. It's and I really was thinking and the spiritual sort of, we have many rituals, no? And one of the ritual is really a ritual of sort of confessing and conviction, confessing followed by conviction. Yeah? Confessing that such and such has happened, and then you make a conviction that you know you would not do such thing. Yeah? That is there. That is there in the form of chanting. There are many chanting which be the drum, and you can, and you, there are so many things you can confess. And is that kind of thing similar, isn't it, to forgive, to asking for forgiveness?
No.
Not quite, huh? Like, is there like a, maybe in say Vajrasattva mantra, for example, Vajrasattva mantra is like a purifying mantra, and then we say Gompo Danimishe Mumpate, you know, O Lord or whatever, you know, I am someone who do not know, and I'm someone who is confused, you know? So therefore I have transgressed the samayas, and I have, you know, degenerated the samayas, and you know, and you are the one who knows, please forgive me. You know, that kind of thing is similar to when we say sorry to someone, no?
Yeah.
It's very similar.
The word forgive, with the give is part of that word. Like we have to give.
Yes.
And we're asking someone to give to us, and we have to give to them.
Uh-huh.
And the four could be
five. Yes.
The four, you have to give.
Sort of like when you say to your person, like, I'm sorry, forgive me, it's like you're saying to them, please release your anger to me, or please pardon what I've done. Please give me your pardon.
Restore.
Restore our relationship, Paul.
Yeah, restore the relationship back to what it was.
Oh, please don't hang on to resentment.
In English, we often couple forgive with forget.
Uh-huh.
If they go hand in hand, it is forgiven.
Uh-huh.
Because it's let go, it's the coffee.
The letting go. You're sort of asking the person not to be angry with you, or not to feel badly to you.
Uh-huh.
Forever and ever.
You're releasing them, almost you're releasing them from feeling bad. Or that this is not really you, it's just one of your defilements, or it's not the real you, because you're asking them to accept the real you, not this covering that makes mistakes and does dumb things and is cruel.
Any practice can be very profound, isn't it? You know, you can take it to a very deep level, very profound level. Yes, Max?
I was just thinking that doing Tonglen meditation is very good if you want to try and get, you know, sort of if you feel like you've been hard on someone and you want to apologize, it's really good to do Tonglen towards them, because that sort of softens you towards them.
Yes.
Softens your attitude towards
certainly.
Them. Yeah.
Certainly.
Talk to yourself.
Mm.
What's
Tong
Len for people who don't know?
Tong Len. Tong and Len basically is give and take. No? I think so, but Tong is maybe letting go, yeah? Or giving. Yeah? So here, maybe if you have something very good, maybe happiness, you know, you sort of let it go, but it's not like it goes in the space or somewhere, but it is sent to someone you have wish. So if I am having good health and you are having, you are having some sort of sickness, then in this part of mind training, in this part of practice, that's a very high level of very, very progressed practitioner. What they try to do is they try to send their good health and happiness to you, and then they take your suffering and so on them, on themselves. So that's like tonglen, no? But in some cases, I heard, you know, maybe there has been many, but in stories, in some cases, it actually happens, you know, when the practitioners are very, very advanced and so on, they can do that. No? But still, it is a very nice, you know, thing to be able to do it. So, tonglen.
As Maxine said, it makes you feel softer towards the person.
Yes.
If they've hurt you.
Yes.
Or you've hurt them even, you know. Mm. You're trying to make something a bit better.
And I think the other practice is if you think you've done something to it, others, the practice of regret is very important. If you practice regret, then it maybe makes it easier for another person to offer forgiveness and see genuine regret.
Yes, yes. Certainly regret has a very big role in the practice of purification. Yes, Shaman?
I was just thinking about in the confession, like the Buddhist confession practice that I'm aware of, there's like there's a confessing and also a rejoicing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a balance.
Mm.
And maybe there's no, but like so with the Christian, not that I really know, but it's seems like there's a, like with forgiveness, there's a belief in an original sin.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe with the other way, there's no actual belief that there's an original wrong, that it can always be purified.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of balanced with rejoicing about the other things. So kind of
but what about confessing and then following with a determination, okay? When you confess, you really have a sense of a strong sort of regret, no? Like if a person had knowingly or unknowingly drunk poison, no? And then they realize that they have drunk poison, no? And they want to leave, and they have a strong sense of regret, no? In a similar way, a person who have maybe done a very bad thing, so then they have a strong sense of regret, you know, that they have done this. Yeah? But I guess there is not, yeah, as you mentioned, there is not, maybe it's better not to have a thought that whatever you have done is, you know, permanent, you know, that you can't do about it, then it does not give you any room. And it sort of follows up with a determination. Shagdom, shagpa and dom. Shagpa is to really confess. And then the determination here is to refrain, restrain oneself from such thing again. Then that practice becomes maybe a complete, you know, practice of purification. If one is to just confess and not make a determination, then, you know, one can, you know, do it again, but if one is to make a determination just at the end, this is what I have done, and you know, it is not good, it has caused this and that, and whatever negative karma and so on, but then knowing that very well, then one make a determination, or it's called dompa. Dompa basically means tying you up, no, for not doing such thing, tying your speech, no, maybe if you have said something wrong, I'm not going to now let it loose. Maybe tying yourself, maybe physically, I'm not going to let loose my hands to just go out and hit someone. And mentally, maybe tying your mind, you know, so you're not going to let it loose, you know. So then maybe there is a practice of mindfulness follows up. We should have a tea break. Yeah.
Can I just ask something quickly? Which part of it is, which part of people is it that gets hurt? Like, is it just the illusion that gets, like, is there really something that can be hurt?
Mm.
Like, Buddha gave his body to tigers and or whatever.
Yes, it hurt comes at a very different level, maybe. Yeah? Of course, the tangible thing is our body. Say if we hit someone, of course, we hurt in that way. But usually it's probably our mind. It gets hurt. When someone says something, the hurt is probably also an experience that one does not like. So therefore, maybe one does not like to be called maybe a cowboy, for example. And then someone called me cowboy, then I got hurt because I don't like to be called cowboy. So what they have done is, you cowboy, and I get hurt. We have nicknames for people, like very naughty monks, they give you nickname in the monastery. You don't like your nickname, and they call you by nickname, and you just, why are you calling me this, instead of get hurt, So it's, maybe it's our ego, It's our ego that gets hurt, really, after some time they get used to the nickname, And then you call them by nickname, they say, yes, what do you... Because initially they don't like it, One person might have 6 or 7 nicknames, Lots of time to practice patience. Sometimes you don't know, Nicknames. In the monastery, it's horrible. They just give nicknames. Some people are so good at giving nicknames. They are like, they call you maybe a name of a food, And you really look like that food. Really. And there is some monk whose job it is to give nicknames. They are not sort of appointed. It's sort of not senior monks, but just the average young monks, maybe, And then they give terrible nicknames, And sometimes monks fighting. What happened? He called me this, And then crying, reporting to the teacher, what happened? Oh, he called me nickname. Very cheeky. That's why I left
Monastery. When the name hurts, we take on a lessening of our value. You've called me a cowboy, therefore you've lessened my own image of me.
Yes.
We're talking pure ego.
Yes. It is ego.
Now, 10 people might be allowed to be called cowboy and not take offence or be hurt. You then are unique that you take on hurt.
Yes.
Of course, it might be intended to hurt too, but...
Yeah, sometimes just for fun people call you nickname, I used to get very sort of... hurt. What's the difference between hurt and annoyed? Little bit different. Say, don't call me. But then they call you. If you say, don't call me, they call you more.
Some nicknames are really pleasant. Some nicknames are really affectionate.
Yes. But then there are some monks, some monks who are called bodhisattvas, So some monks are called bodhisattvas because they are very kind, They are very kind and very sort of disciplined, And some monks have big head. Some monks have big head. They are called ox, And then they say, you should not say this. If you call some, very senior practitioner ox, you will be reborn, as an ox 505 times, And then they tell you a story, Long time ago, there was a monk who was naughty. He called an arhat ox, and he was born like ox,
And then they see him, and there's that monk.
This nickname is not a good thing, yeah. What is in Australia people give nickname?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's affectionate.
It's
usually
affectionate.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Sometimes you think, oh, that poor person's never had a
nickname. It's really about attachment, isn't it? No? Mm-hmm. People are attached to their name, no?
Mm-hmm.
So then someone calls
themselves, really.
Yeah.
That sort of concretizing. I am this when somebody else calls you and I'm named.
Mm.
It's an attack of that.
Can be. Six, harsh speech. Mm-hmm. Harsh speech, maybe, huh? Or senseless gossip, really. It's a speech action.
Yeah.
The speech action. And if someone really gets hurt by it, then it's a harsh speech.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of karmas to purify. Or it's just a gossip, you know?
Mm.
Maybe if it is not heard. Let's have something.
Yeah,
have a tea.
Yeah.